NRP S2 E7 Animation Exercises. Hey everybody, welcome back. This week we're going to be talking about animation, particularly actually doing it, because last week I talked about the equipment you should have or you should look into trying out, different stuff that I have tried. Like I said, I'm no expert, I've just been doing things and practicing and studying and whatnot, and I'd like to share my findings, and if you find other software and other ways to work that work better for you, be sure to share them. Now, you probably, if you've been to the blog array, you've seen a reel of my pencil tests I did in college. Keep in mind that was about 10 years ago, so I've been doing a lot of things. Anyway, let's talk about timing. Timing in animation, there's frames per second. Now, in traditional animation, film FPS is about 30 frames. Now, this has been a sort of a hotbed. Films have been, like The Hobbit, have been running at 48 frames a second, and they're pushing to make, like, I think Avatar sequels are going to be even higher. And the issue with it is that it's too real, it's too good for the things, because you start realizing how fake sets and props can look, and it feels like TV to some people. Now, I'm not exactly sure the reasoning behind that, but another thing is that in animation, characters move in what's referred to by some people as toon time as opposed to real time, because if you've ever done rotoscoping, which is taking actual footage of a person and tracing the frames, you realize that people move differently than cartoons, because cartoons are simplified frames per second. Film is usually 30. Television is usually 24 frames a second. Now, the thing to remember about animation is that you don't really have to draw every one of those frames. Most animation is not on ones, as that would be termed. Most animation is really done at least on twos, which is you hold up, there are 24 frames a second, you hold two frames for every one drawing. And that's a fairly easier process when you're animating, and it also makes the image stay on the screen and in the brain a little bit longer. Things can be shot on ones, but those are usually things like, it's called straight ahead animation for things where you just draw the next drawing, as opposed to pose animation, which is what a lot of traditional animators work, where they work out the key poses in the acting, and then the in-betweens work out the timing and the spacing. Straight ahead animation is usually used for like effects work, because things like that have to flow and move fast. Things like fire, smoke, just things that move organically, and that's on ones. It's nice to change things up, so you'll see a lot of timing change from twos to threes. Bill Plimpton likes to animate on fours. Now, he said before that it can look kind of jerky, but you know, if your audience is accepting of the style, especially if you're trying to make it look, you know, funny and cartoonish and quick moving, and you draw it in such a very exaggerated way that he likes to draw things in, then it can work, and that's fine. So I want to talk about that. And another thing about timing is you want to focus on, when you watch a documentary about animation and they talk to some old guy, he's talking about like back in the day when they didn't know what they were doing and when they were figuring stuff out. And if you watch like old Mickey Mouse cartoons and Oswald the Lucky Rabbit cartoons, you realize stuff doesn't have weight, because things kind of move and they pick up. The reason why is because there's slowing in and slowing out, easing of motion, meaning stuff doesn't always move in a straight line. Sometimes when people move, if you know, if a hand's crippled by weight or by some other thing, it might be shaky and jittery. You know, there's a lot of character in movement. And you have to realize that plays into things, because I mean, I've done animations before where I didn't have time to think on the timing. I had a senior project in college where I basically just wanted an animation while my character's poking its head in and then poking out. If you make all the in-between drawings timed out evenly, then it all just flows in an in a straight, even path, which is very robotic and unnatural. And the thing about puppet animation, Flash and whatnot, is that it can this process, using keys for that, it can look very unnatural and very automated and weird, because you have like two drawings and you have the computer calculating, moving in between, and people don't move exactly evenly all the time. There's layout. When you're animating a scene, the way I would do it, when they would give me a project in college, you know, they'd say, okay, you need to draw this character walking from this side of the page to the other, and I would start, I would draw on one piece of paper the figure, how he would look walking from the one side and how he would look from the other, because sometimes there'd be, he might go distant and shrink, or he might be just going straight across and look exactly the same, so I would just copy the same kind of drawing. But you would have the layout, you'd focus, like, I would focus on the trail of the head and the torso and the numbers. I'll talk about walk cycles in a second, but I would draw the character as he walked, and then I would figure out what the key poses I need to focus on. And then in between that, there's breakdowns that are not quite key poses, but they're not in-betweens. They are kind of important. And then after that is in-betweens. And when you're animating, the key poses are the fun parts to draw. It's the fun parts to animate. It's a lot like actually straight head animation, except there's gaps in between. So, like, you know, somebody's screaming at you, they've got their hands up, and then the next drawing they've got them way up high and their face is scrunched, and then the next one their hands are down and they're screaming real loud. And then the breakdowns for that would be where the hands are passing down, because things move together. So, like, there's an equal and opposite reaction, you know, for the head to go up, the hands have to go down. And when a person's walking, their one hand tends to be forward and one hand tends to be back, and their legs are opposing that. And you can, as you're working, this is the stuff you're figuring out, and you're trying to make it fun for yourself. And by the time you get down to in-betweens, that's just the business of figuring out some slowing out, making things a little bit easier, and then also layering the different things. Like, especially if you're working digitally, you can animate an element and then animate another element on another layer. And I like to work on the layout before I sit down and do my exercise, because that way it really gets in your head, like, okay, I know what I'm doing, I can see it right here, and then I draw that on different pieces of paper, and then I draw the in-between. And by the time you get to the in-betweens, it's the nitty-gritty, you're very tired, and you have more good drawings, because if you're drawing for extended hours or days, like when I was in college, you had a lot of a project where you'd be working on it and having fun and barreling forward. Around hour 16, you're kind of, where am I? Oh, yeah, there's this thing. So you really don't want to have to be thinking too much. So that's why charts are important when figuring stuff out first, before you get kind of dizzy. I mean, you can take breaks and stuff, but the thing is, in college and in life, you know, breaks are fine, except when something's due, you don't have time to get up and take a walk. And the nice thing about animation was, when I was in college doing pencil tests in, you know, traditional 2D character animation classes 1 and 2, I think that's the courses I took. I might have had a third one, I'm not sure. It's all kind of a blur. But the thing is, when I would sit at that animation desk, I wouldn't want to get up. I wouldn't want to get and take the break. I would only take the last break in the class because my hand was a claw and going, oh, stop drawing, you. Stop. I must get up. And that's the passion. That's what you know, it's the stupidest thing I'm drawing. I mean, I could show you some. I mean, you've obviously seen the things I have animated, but when you feel passionate about the excitement and you want to work on it, I mean, I'm going to talk about exercises in a minute, but when you care about what you're doing, you know, it's important to remind yourself to take breaks, because you kind of have to, or you could really hurt yourself. But it's also, like I said, doing in-betweens, you're going to want to be able to relax and not have to think. You want to get your thinking and laying out done first. This is important. Let's talk about exercises. The simplest animation exercise that they always start you with is the bouncing ball. Now, this expresses so many things, and it's very useful. It expresses the idea of squash and stretch, and timing, and all kinds of things, because the way a ball bounces will tell you a lot about what kind of material the ball is. If you got a rubber ball and you drop it, and it squats down and it pings up real fast, that'll bounce different than, say, you drop, like, a ping pong ball is very hard, and therefore it will ping and just bounce straight up. And if you bounce a golf ball, the golf ball, you will drop it, and it might bounce a little bit, and procedurally every bounce recoil, so after that, gets smaller and smaller. But it's the kind of material in the ball that tells you a lot about how it travels, how it moves. You know, a ball can just go plop, and that's not really a ball now, is it? That's like a bag of sand. In fact, another exercise that's very important to learn is the flour sack. This is animating. It's a lot like the carpet in Aladdin, I remember when we studied it, is that you want to work on a mass, maintaining a constant mass as in each of your drawings overall, so it doesn't feel like the character's shrinking or growing. And you want to get out the acting. You want a body motion, shoulders all of a sudden, a belly, feet. There's no face on this thing, but you get the personality. It's a lot like Luxo the Lamp and stuff like that. The flower sack. Also, there's the swing pendulum. Now, this is a lot like the bouncing ball. It tells you what kind. Like, if it's going swoosh, back up, slows in, reaches the point, it doesn't stay there very long, goes right back up. Or if it's just, you know, you can have a pendulum that's like three drawings, over one end, over at the other, and one down at the bottom. And if it flicker, you can see the flicker. And that's an important thing, is realizing if your drawings start to flicker, you start to realize it's a matter of the frame rate, and it's a matter of how close the drawings are to each other. Because some people, when they're doing like a walk cycle, which I'll talk about in a second, some people will have the pose exactly the same, except they swap the feet, and they don't have enough drawings in between, enough frames in between to stretch it out, and they're not spaced out enough that the brain perceives it as it's just the same thing, only something's wiggling. I mean, this can be used for an effect, like in credits, people have, you know, they'll write the credits and then they'll write it again, so it's sort of a moving hold, so the words kind of look like they're vibrating, and it can be a desired effect, or it can be really annoying when you don't intend to have a flicker. So, once you get past these basic non-human things to understand motion when you're making animation, which I need to practice these again because it's been so long since I've really done animation. You know, I've been doing comics for a while and learning to draw and add detail and make my figures solid and all this stuff. Now it's like, well, I want to go back to animation and do a whole lot of drawings, but make them simple, but make it look good. And it's a whole different discipline I'm trying to teach myself. So let's talk about head turns. Now, when we studied this in college at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, we did an expression change, you know, when the head went down and it came up, just to get the idea. And I think I'm going off of 10 years of memory here, so we did an expression change, and we also did a take, a head turn looking over at something and then turns back and has an extreme take. I mean, I'll link to some videos of how to properly do a head turn in the blog. So, the head turn, it's a matter of looking of the head down, moving down, and moving back up, or moving to the side. And it's really, the first time you do it, you have to start thinking about the mass of maintaining the size, and also not making it look like it's flickering, not making it look dead and mechanical. You have to start deciding where's it dip and where's it hold. Then let's talk about a walk, specifically walking across the screen. Now, this is one reason why pegboards would have, in old animation, they'd have the sliding thing with the fields. This is what fields are specifically for. You can find field charts on animation papers that, you know, 12 field, 16 field. There's huge fields bigger than that, I think. But The idea of the old walks that would walk, like if your character's walking in perspective, that's, you want to be able to make the background pan along with the character as you're animating, and they have to mark that for the cameraman. And you also want to make sure that you can measure how far apart each drawing is from each other. So that's why animation discs have those sliding pegboards. And it's kind of a little outdated, but it's also a good thing to appreciate how it works. Now that we have software where a person can do a walk cycle, and you can move that at whatever pace you want, whatever speed, you can adjust it, you can move them all around, flip it upside down digitally without having to redraw things. It's so nice. But the walk cycle is two steps, that left foot and right foot moving forward, and also the body going up. Now, the thing about the cycle is that the last drawing feeds into the first one, so it can loop. And, you know, this is an important thing that a lot of people upload their animation practice on YouTube, and they don't, it's either not a cycle or it's very short, and they don't loop it. If it is a cycle, and it's like, you want to loop something a number of times to really get a feel for how, you can really, if you start watching a walk cycle that's done poorly, or there's something wrong with it, and you start looking at it, the more it loops, the more you start going, well, his posture is not right, or he's dragging his foot. And I'll link to a nice video by this one fellow, Drawing with Jazza, on YouTube. He's a good animator, and he's got some good breakdowns of how to use Flash and how to make paintings in Photoshop. He's a good guy. I like to follow his tutorials. And he has a nice example of the traditional walk cycle that's drawn a different drawing each frame, and walk cycles that are done with the flash tweening, in-betweening puppet motion idea. And you can see a difference in them. And, you know, he says if he took more time, he might be able to clean up, like, some of the joints were popping a little weird. But it's like, you know, that's what you do with the cycle, is you want to watch it a lot and sit and go, I need to clean this up here where this connects to the other thing, or I might slow in or ease in here or something with that. And cycles are really important, because you'll realize if you watch old 30s cartoons, they use cycles a lot. And, you know, Warner Brothers did this a lot, where you'd have a cycle and then you'd have somebody else repeating the exact same cycle, but it would be a few frames off, so you wouldn't notice it unless you were actually paying attention, which I did. So, anyway, there's also a run cycle, I guess we could say cycle. I mean, as long as we're talking about cycles. But run is more, there's more of a lean in. There's the different kinds of runs. There's the, you know, the standard guy hoofing it with his arms pumped in the air. And then there's the guy with the arms stretched out running away from a fire. Oh, I got to get to this thing at the other end of the screen. And, you know, it's a lot like the walk, which the walk has, basically, there's the stride pose, which is both legs are stretched apart. And then there's the middle pose, where the one foot, the weight is shifting from one foot, and it's at the person is at the height of the stride. And then there's the passing pose in between that, where the foot is coming over, and then there's the connect again, the contact, and then I'll link to some photos and I'll link to some tutorials that reference this stuff, so you can actually see what I'm talking about. It's hard to do on an audio podcast. So that's the run cycle. It's a lot like the walk cycle, except it's a lot snappier. You know, I remember doing it in class really quick, and it was, after I did a walk cycle, the run cycle was a lot easier, especially when, you know, you realize the left and right halves of the body move like pistons, where the right hand is out and the left hand is behind the back, and then the right foot is forward and the back left foot is back, and then you pump. And then you can also make variations. Like, that's the nice thing about walk cycles. People hate them because you have to do them all the time, but you can get so much of a character from basic mechanics of, like, okay, as the usual person is stride pose, and then where are their arms? You know, most people, they're to balance themselves, the one arm is back and the other arm is forward. Maybe both arms are back. It's a weird pose, and you got this weird dip-de-doo. Or Maybe for each time that they move their arms, they only move their legs twice as slow, so their arms only make so many cycles, so you have to do a slightly longer cycle, more steps, but you see a movement that's different. Or maybe instead of going up, the body goes down. And this is the fellow who made the Animator's Survival Guide, Richard Williams, I believe. He would stress he would become obsessed with, like, watching people's walks and the cadence that they walk in and just the variance, because you can get so much character out of such a simple thing that you don't put any perception into. It's like, well, when most people, their body goes up, maybe this person's body dips down and just back up. Or, you know, like, there's a walk cycle that's common in 30s and 20s animation, and John Kay has a nice tutorial about it on his blog. It's called The Double Bounce, where it doesn't happen in real life too often, but the character, to look youthful, the character bobs up and down when a normal person will bob up and down a little bit as they walk. If a person just stays the same height as they walk, that it looks very mechanical. You might notice it in the Bob's Burgers credit sequence when the one guy dressed in the burger mascot costume just kind of glides. And I mean, there's a way to do that naturally. There's the roll step, and when I was in marching band, we did a thing where your upper body would stay fairly still, but it's weird to not see a person's height move when they walk. And the double bounce, the way it works is, as a character goes down and goes up, they do it twice to kind of show a little pop. The four-legged walk cycle is an interesting concept, because you've got some creatures that could move where they move their both right legs and back legs and four legs together, so like they're moving their left legs and then their right legs at the same time. And then you've got others who they might do the forward legs move and then the back legs move. And it matters on how the animal is shaped and how they want to move. And this is an interesting idea for animators, is that, say, you've got the front legs move in a certain cadence and then the back legs do a double bounce. And finally, another thing that we animated that I remember, I have to look through my reels to see what things I did, but one thing I remember redoing in class was the lifting a heavy object, because this is about anticipation. Now, you know, the character sees an object, and then they might do a clinch, and then they lift up, and then they lift down to grab it, and then the object, they have to slowly pick it up to show the weight of the object, because if the character had a big, huge, like a refrigerator, and just went whoop, like that, you know, that's typical of classic old Mickey Mouse cartoons, where there's no weight to the character, as opposed to slowing in and picking up and lifting up, like Link lifting something over their head, you know. Now, I've discussed in another post on the site books on animating, and I want to just mention again that I think the Preston Blair book, it's the thinnest, you know, one of the thinnest books on animation out there, but it's also one of the best, most useful for kids to begin with, and pros, like, you know, each page of that, there's something useful on there, like, be it, here's how a walk cycle works, here's how a run cycle works, and it's like, you can use that, the knowledge in that, again and again in different practice, and it's very clear, easy to understand. In fact, I'm going to link to a site that took those chapters and took those different things and made animated GIFs out of them. Now, you'll see that the animation is jerky as it needs to be fleshed out and finished, but the stuff, the process, the movements are still there, and you could in between and make things smoother, or you could just go with jerky if it works for you. But you'll see examples of it on the site in the link. So, anyway, thanks for listening. Tune in next time where I'll talk about something else. See you on the other side. More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at norights.tumblr.com.